from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
Let's go.
We do welcome you in. It is time for a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX on a Wednesday evening. We take you all the way until 8 o'clock tonight. And after we get done here, something that we talked about a lot yesterday, we are going to play the audio version of yesterday. Myself, along with Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas, we did a video show that streamed on YouTube and on our different social media channels. We've taken the audio portion of that. It's really a breakdown of everything that we heard from the Cardinals earlier this week and our thoughts on it. We are going to play that for you during the 8 o'clock hour. So hopefully if you didn't catch the video version, or if you did, you want to hear it again, we'll have that for you tonight at 8 o'clock. Lots to get to this evening. In about 9 minutes, we're going to talk with one of our favorite baseball journalists out there, Scott Miller, contributor to the New York Times. He's always been based out on the West Coast. He is going to be at the Padres-Braves game tonight. We'll just get his thoughts really on everything going on in the postseason. A wild day once again. The first team to advance out of the wild card round was the Detroit Tigers. They continue their fantastic second half run. This is a team that was selling at the deadline. They sold off Jack Flaherty, and then they just took off. And now they are into the divisional series after sweeping through the Astros, winning today 5-2. And then something we are monitoring, the Royals and the Orioles. That game is currently in the top of the eighth inning, and the Royals hold a 2-1 lead. So if Kansas City can win that game, they will then advance to the divisional series themselves. The National League game's coming up tonight. Mets and Brewers in Milwaukee. That game's going to get started in about 15 minutes or so as the Brewers are playing for their playoff lives. They're down 1-0 in the series. Braves and Padres tonight as well, as the Padres lead that series 1-0. Here's what we got coming up on the program today. So Scott Miller's going to join us now in about 7-8 minutes or so. Later on in the hour, we'll talk with Jacob Sasimo. He is part of the sports team over at Channel 4. We'll get his thoughts. He was covering the press conference, like much of St. Louis media. He was covering the press conference earlier this week that the Cardinals held. What were his thoughts on that? In the second hour, we're actually going to talk with somebody who's really, really smart. We're going to talk with somebody who is a doctor, and we're going to get into concussions, because once again, this is something that has come up in a very big way. We're seeing a lot of concussions right now in the NFL, and there continues to be more and more studies about this. And we're going to talk to a doctor about that coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to do that about 7:20. We'll play back some of what Blues head coach Drew Bannister had to say earlier today as training camp continues on. I am the first person, the next person, all the way to the last person to tell you that results in preseason, in spring training, all those things, that the results, I'm not worried about the results. That you get your work in, and that's what you need to do. Maybe that's more true about baseball than other sports, and I'm a baseball-first guy. But I'm getting a little bit worried about the Blues. Now, there's still a lot of guys who are playing, and they're you know, who may not be key members of the team, and look, there's still a lot of line adjustments and things like that, but they lose last night by a 3-1 score. It was not an especially good performance last night. They're going to play again tomorrow against Dallas, but they're starting to run out of time to put everything together and to be where they want to be coming out of the preseason. They have two preseason games left, tomorrow and on Saturday, and then they are going to open up the regular season a week from yesterday when they head west. They're going to play their first three games on the road this year against Seattle, San Jose, and Vegas before they open up the home portion of their season on Tuesday, October 15th, when they match up against Minnesota over at the Enterprise Center. But it's not looking great right now for them. Again, it's preseason. You take everything in the preseason with a grain of salt, but we will hear a little bit of what Drew Bannister had to say earlier today as he's mixing some line combinations up and talking through what it looks like and how he's feeling with the start of the season less than a week away. So that's everything that's going to be coming up on the program today. We'll get into the Bally deal. That's been kind of the big sports story today. Obviously, you can always listen to Cardinals games right here on KMOX, but the way you watch Cardinals games, likely to be changing. What does this really mean? Like, it's a very complicated situation. And even if you hear the long explanation, it's still complicated. But I will do my best to kind of go through it and go through all the potential results of what's happening. There's a lot of different things that could happen. I don't think baseball was expecting. In fact, I know that baseball was not expecting to be dealing with this today. But in many ways, it's good that they're dealing with this now as opposed to a few months from now with the season just about set to get started. So I'll definitely share my thoughts on what this Bally TV deal means. I'll try not to get into the minutia of, you know, bankruptcy hearings, but what this actually means to fans and how it will impact you. We'll try to get into that coming up later on in the program as well. Again, if you want to chime in, you can do so 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Up next, Scott Miller joins us. We'll talk all things playoff baseball with him in just a moment here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We do continue on here on a Wednesday night, keeping you updated on everything going on in the baseball playoffs. Earlier today, the Tigers advance by beating the Astros 5-2, winning that series 2-0, and we are keeping a close eye on the Royals and Orioles, top of the eighth inning. Royals lead 2-1. If they hold on to that lead, they advance as well. Later on, Mets and Brewers, Braves at Padres. One person who's going to be at the Braves-Padres game, one of our favorite people to be able to talk baseball with, he is Scott Miller. You follow him on Twitter at ScottMillerBBL. Scott, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
Hey, Matt, real good. How are you?
Doing all right. What's been your general takeaway on this first day and a half of playoff baseball? It's fun to see teams like the Tigers go on this kind of run in advance. It looks like the Royals have a good chance of advancing as well.
Yeah, it does. And it has been fun. I think a couple of the quick takeaways so far, maybe the sun is finally set on the Houston Astros empire. You know, I mean, they've been so good for so long, but they're just not the team they were. And it's interesting because, you know, here the Tigers are. They're the young bucks in October. They've only got one guy, Matt Beerling, on their postseason roster that even has any playoff experience at all. So they went into Houston, which is like built a house on the playoff foundation for the last decade. And the young upstart Tigers take Houston down in Houston. You know, you can kind of see the Tigers' window opening and Houston's closing. The road teams keep winning. The only home team so far to win was San Diego over Atlanta last night. So that just reinforces the, you know, the home field advantage in baseball is not quite as important as it is in football and basketball. If Kansas, another takeaway, if Kansas City does win and hold on to win over Baltimore, I don't think any of us would have had three AL Central playoff teams all in the division series when spring training started.
No, and it has certainly been fun to watch that. Going back to Detroit for just a second, because you talk about that window opening. The window opened after the trade deadline. They were sellers at the deadline, and then they took off. What did you see from them as they found a second gear after, in many ways, they had already said that they didn't think that they were going to be a postseason club this year?
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, I think probably the important distinction there is the front office said they weren't going to be a playoff team by their actions, but A.J. Hinch and his coaching staff and the players never said we're not going to be a playoff team. You know, once they got rid of the veterans like Jack Flaherty, traded them away, you know, they turned the keys over to the kids. And, you know, A.J. Hinch, you know, they called Hinch and his staff, Joey Cora, et cetera, say what you want about Hinch for the Houston cheating scandal back in 2017. But he's one of the best managers out there. And, you know, he and his staff, you know, they coached the young players. They taught them. They developed them. And they also mentally coached them. I mean, A.J. asked, you probably saw the clip after the Tigers clinched. After the Tigers clinched, A.J. referred to it. He said, hey, I asked you guys back in August, what kind of team do you want to be? and AJ told the Tigers on the clinch night, I can see now what you wanted to be a playoff team. And, you know, all the young talent they've got there, Torkelson, Riley Green, Cabrera, Matt Beerling, obviously Tarek Skubal is going to win the Cy Young Award. When you've got a building block like him as the foundation of the team, you know, that gives you a good chance in any short series. And, you know, the Tigers are, I think, it's almost like once they traded the veterans away, the kids, they were playing without any pressure, and they excelled, and they took to everything, and they also pitched very, very well. You know, the young pitchers pitched well, and Hitch and his staff handled them well.
You'll watch the Padres and Braves tonight. If the Padres win, they will advance, being they were the only home team to win yesterday. You're talking in St. Louis, where Mike Schilt is a very popular person to this day. Many Cardinals fans wish that he was still the Cardinals manager. What has Schilt done this year with the Padres to allow them to put together a 93-win season? And certainly, they seem like a team that could go on a deep playoff run.
Yeah, you know what? He's been a great fit in San Diego. The players really play for him. And I think what he does is so well. It's not necessarily the in-game X's and O's as it is managing the team in the clubhouse and in batting practice, in all areas, even outside of the game. I mean, he's fine in the game too, but what he's done is, you know, any friction from last year's team, any egos, he's great at team building and getting the players to buy in. And the Padres, that's the biggest difference between this year and last year. But, you know, last year, their then-manager, Bob Melvin, he and A.J. Preller clashed. Schilt and Preller are more on the same page. But, you know, Schilt, you know, it's the win-every-day mantra. It's figure out what we can do to win today. It's keeping a cohesive clubhouse. It's getting the players to buy in. And part of that is setting egos aside and moving runners over and doing a lot of the little things it takes to win. The Padres have done a lot better job with that this year. And, you know, I think overall, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, situational hitting, you know, he's got a team that they've converted into a bunch of contact hitters and line drive hitters, and they don't just rely on the home run. And, you know, some of it's old school baseball, the way that, you know, I mean, he talks a lot about learning the game under George Kissel, and you can see George Kissel's spirit in what Mike Schilt does.
And I don't know how much you've paid attention here over the last few days of what's going on in St. Louis. Obviously, you're busy covering the playoffs, but the announcement was made earlier the week that John Mozeliak is going to spend one more year as the director of baseball operations, and Heim Bloom's been brought in. He's going to oversee a complete redevelopment of the player development system this year before moving in to the big chair next year. The Cardinals have indicated that payroll is going to come back next season. We don't know how much they're going to lower it, but it's going to be lower. Obviously, the TV stuff that was announced today, that's all part of this as well. So just from a view from 50,000 feet, somebody who's been around this game a really long time, Scott, what's your takeaway on these really major changes that are about to occur here in St. Louis?
You know, I've liked John Mozeliak for a long time. I think he's done a really good job over the years. Obviously, the last few years have not gone as well as the Cardinals would have preferred. I think everything you just laid out, everything that's said in St. Louis, I think it all sounds good. I think the talk is good. I'll sit back and see if they can put the talk into action. Heim Bloom did not exactly cover himself in glory in Boston. I know a lot of it was John Henry the ownership didn't want to spend the money anymore. Trading away Mookie Betts, you know, I mean, Heim was the guy that got stuck doing that. It was an organizational thing, and that's going to hurt the Red Sox, I think, for a long time. I mean, you know, especially a homegrown player, you can't keep a guy like that. You know, Bloom, the Red Sox just didn't take off under Bloom. He made several mistakes. We'll see in his second attempt after he takes over for Mozeliak, if he's how much he's learned and if he can figure some things out. But I think the jury's out big time on the next few years at St. Louis. I'm not overly impressed. Obviously, what I've said with what Heim's done in Boston, cutting back the payroll is fine. I mean, obviously, they do need to overhaul their development system and, take a break maybe from spending so much money until they've got good young talent and develop that young talent, and then you're ready to supplement it with free agent key pieces. But I think it's going to take a while.
He is Scott Miller. You follow him on Twitter at Scott Miller BBL. He's one of the best baseball writers you're ever going to come about. Scott, appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight and the rest of the playoffs, and hopefully we'll catch up again real soon.
Look forward to it. Enjoy the playoffs. Great time of year right now.
Awesome. Very good. That's Scott Miller joining us here on the program, and we appreciate him taking a moment or so with us. Back-to-back guest, our friend Jacob Sersosimo. You see him on Channel 4. He was at the Cardinals press conference earlier this week. I'm trying to spend this week talking to as many people as possible who were at the press conference. We did that a little bit yesterday, just to get their take. So everybody has different, like Scott Miller's take on Heim Bloom right there, very different take than my take on him. I'm excited about Bloom. I think the deficiencies in Boston are connected to ownership, not to him. I look at what he helped build in Tampa. I even look at what he built in Boston in terms of their player development system and their farm system and where they're ranked now compared to when he got there. So I am a Heim Bloom guy. But Scott brings up legitimate points about his time in Boston. So everybody's got different takes on things, and that's what makes the world go round. We'll see what Jacob Sersosimo thought about the press conference earlier in the week. He joins us in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on a Wednesday night. We'll keep you updated on what's going on in the baseball playoffs as the Royals and Orioles are going to the bottom of the ninth inning with the Royals holding a 2-1 lead. If Kansas City gets the final three outs here in the bottom of the ninth, they will advance to the next round of the playoffs. Unfortunately for Cardinals fans, they are not in the postseason. Earlier this week, we did get a press conference. That's the extent of, I guess, postseason action this year. A lot was said, and one of the many media members who is there covering it, he does a great job on Channel 4, sports anchor and reporter. He is Jacob Sersosimo. Jacob, appreciate you taking some time with us today. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Matt. I'm great. How are you, man?
I'm all right. So as I was leaving the press conference on Monday, I saw you and your photog looking around trying to find Cardinals fans to get a reaction to the news of the day. I don't know how you did on that, but I'm sure you have spoken with people. What has been the reaction to what the Cardinals announced earlier this week for you?
Well, we didn't get a reaction on camera because the people we talked to didn't want to be on camera because of their reactions they had to me. A few of them were just shoulder slumped is really, I think, what we can look at when talking about what the Cardinals announced on Monday. I think fans, the ones at least I've spoken to, were kind of looking for more of an immediate decision, I think is the right way to put it. I used a John Mozeliak soundbite the other night that said, this is not a rebuild, it's a reset. And I've had someone ask me, what's the difference? And I looked at him and said, I really wish I had a better answer for you. But I think fans were maybe looking for something a little bit more immediate and quicker. The way it looks, it could take a little bit more time. Now, I know the Blues are kind of doing that with the retool and everything, but I'm not sure we got a great answer as to a timeline for anything, which I understand from a Cardinals point of view. Why would you put a timeline on anything? But yeah, I think the fans that I've spoken to from the time that this was announced to now, and really the ones that I've actually seen on social media as well, it seems like they were looking for more of a quick fix or an immediate move other than, this is what the future could look like.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people say that they walked out of there with more questions than answers, and I understand why some say that. For me, I got answers, but the question that I still don't have an answer to, and they were asked it, and they chose not to answer it at this point, was when they talk about salary going down for next season, are you talking about trading away big money contracts and players who are still contributors to this team? Or are you talking about letting guys like Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn walk away and filling those mid-level spots with cost-controlled players who are coming up from the minor leagues? Because those are two different routes. One is more of a teardown. The other one is a let's let the farm system start providing some more production for this team. And it's probably a cross of the two, but until we really know what direction they're going for next year and how much they're going to cut payroll, I feel like it's hard to really know anything coming out of that press conference for this upcoming season.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, like you mentioned, are you going to pretty much tear it down to the bones and let, you know, the young guys really build this up? But if you do that, you also have to understand that you're probably going to go through a couple years of not great records, potentially. Historically, that's how it goes. And if that's also the case of where they're going, then do you really, from a fan's point of view or even someone that covers them, do you think maybe why didn't they do this sooner? You know, the Yadier Molina and the Albert Pujols, that was a couple of years ago. Once they leave, now are fans going to start wishing that this would have happened a couple of years ago so they could have already done that? Or do they feel like they, even though they didn't make the postseason the last 2 years, so do they look at it as far as we've just delayed this process even more and now they're going to go through that? This offseason is going to be really, really telling in the fact of what they're going to do with Nolan Arenado, Sonny Gray, some of those bigger contracts, because if they do break this whole thing down, then the big question comes in, why now and not a couple years ago?
Yeah, and look, it's not my job to speak for the organization. I kind of understand how they get into this spot, because you talk about that final season with Pujols and Molina. That was a 93-win season. They feel like in that moment, they were wrong, but they felt like in that moment that they did enough for the 2023 version that they would be able to have a very good year. That turned out to be completely wrong because they won 71 games. And then this past offseason, they took the Band-Aid route with the Gibsons and the Lins and guys like that, thinking that that would be able to get them back to what they were in 2023. And it was a lot better, but it wasn't totally right. So I feel like the backs were against the wall, that they had to do something somewhat major at this point. But at the same time, if you squint and are fair about it, I also think you can see how they got to this point.
Absolutely. And it's also really hard because you look at what they did and they're an 83-79 team. They're above 500. And, you know, in the middle of the summer, when you look at this team in July, especially before that All-Star break, you're looking at a postseason team. So it's not like it was last year at all. This year was different, and they had pieces in there. They just didn't come together pretty much after the All-Star break and down the stretch, which if you look at it in that point of view, which I'm not trying to like sugarcoat this at all. Like I'm not trying to make it sound like it was way better than maybe what it was. But what I am saying is, like, you're right in the fact of it a couple years ago, they don't have to break it all down. Of course, hindsight's 20/20. You look at it now and you think maybe that should have been the case. But this year wasn't like a terrible year. They're not the White Sox, for crying out. Like, they had a poor season compared to Cardinal standards, which I understand that part of it. But they're still above 500 team. They just couldn't get it done down the stretch and make the postseason. And for St. Louis fans, that's not good enough, which I completely understand. And I understand where this fan base is coming from. It's just curious on now where they go from here. Do they break it all down all of a sudden, or do they try to stick it out with some of these guys and believe they can maybe squeak into a postseason spot next year or do something very similar to what they did this year? How that leaves the fan base, I have no clue, but I know the ones I've talked to aren't necessarily thrilled with not playing October baseball.
Well, the Kansas City Royals just beat the Baltimore Orioles 2-1, so they take that series 2-0. Kansas City last year was 56-106. This year they go 86-76, so a very similar record to the Cardinals. They're three wins better than the Cardinals this year, but they win this first round of the playoffs. And what the Royals did is they've got a very young team, and they beefed up analytics and baseball operations and things like that, and that had an impact on them this year. Those are many of the things that we don't know how many things the Cardinals are going to be able to do to impact the Major League roster next year, but if they do amp up that baseball operations and amp up the analytics and the data department, they've got an opportunity to maybe get more out of players at the Major League level than they have gotten in the last 2 years.
Yeah, the hard part with the Royals is, like, I don't know how realistic a one-year turnaround is. But you mention it like that, it sounds like, you know, oh, they did this in 1 year. Maybe that can be a realistic standard for a lot of teams. I'm not 100% sure on how realistic that is for teams, but I understand exactly how they did it. And I think that's the way that baseball is going. So the way that the Cardinals are going is the correct direction. Like, you have to go towards this operation side. You have to go towards this technology through the minors. This youth movement, I get where they're going with it. You have Mason Wynn, kind of the head of that youth movement. That is a good position to be in if that is the direction you're going. And for them, that seems to be the direction they're going. So I'm very interested to see how this develops, you know, when we talk to them again during winter warm-up, right? Like you mentioned, a lot of people had a lot more questions than they did answers when they left the press conference on Monday, which I understand, but this is going to have to start working throughout the next few months. And when we get to winter warm-up, there's going to be more questions, especially for me, of, okay, where are you as far as this process? Did you spend that money you talked about? Who did you hire? What's the technology you guys are going for? How are the minor leagues looking at this standpoint, because you've had a couple months to do that? And I'm really looking forward to that point, because I think we're going to have a lot more answers for Cardinals fans, especially right now where a lot of them are just confused on where is this money going.
Yeah, it'd be great if we got to winter warm-up and they said we've hired 15 new individuals that are going to work in our baseball analytics department, and we've hired 9 new people who are all going to serve as roving coordinators throughout our minor league system, and we've created all these positions. That, again, it kind of goes back to how we started this conversation. The exact details of the plan were not given, and I think for some Cardinals fans are just not going to be happy because John Mozeliak and Oliver Marmol are still in their positions, but others, I think if more details would have been given, they might be more willing to hop on.
Yeah, and I just hope that, like, the Cardinals have those details that they know of, they just didn't tell us, because I think that's the fear of the fans, is like they didn't really say anything about those details because they don't know what those details are. You know, a lot of people know that I worked in Springfield, Missouri before this, covered the Springfield Cardinals. I'm getting texts from people in Springfield saying, what's this mean for Springfield? What's going to happen in Springfield? How's this going to change things in Springfield? And I'm texting them all back and saying, I have no clue. I don't know what this means for Springfield. I don't know what this necessarily means for Memphis. And we didn't really get answers in that press conference. But like I said, I'm just hoping that, you know, and I think fans are hoping they had answers. They just weren't telling us, other than they were just laying this out and they don't have answers. I don't know what the answer to that question is, but I know there's still a lot of confusion, not only here, but in those cities that have these teams on, okay, what's next for the team that's here and how are you going to change what's here?
He is Jacob Sersosimo. You see him as an anchor and reporter, Channel 4 KMOV. Follow him on Twitter at Jacob Sersosimo. That's Sersosimo. Jacob, always appreciate the time. It was good to see you early in the week. Hopefully we see you again real soon.
Yeah, appreciate it, Matt. Thanks, man.
You bet. That's Jacob Sersosimo joining us here on the program. We'll take another break, come back, and wrap up hour number one. Some big news for St. Louis earlier today in terms of a big sporting event that's going to be coming to town. We'll give you all the details on that in just a moment. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program. In hour number two, we're going to hear a little bit from Blues coach Drew Bannister. Also going to talk with a doctor who recently published a research study when it comes to concussions in the NFL and concussions for football players. This is a topic that seemingly has really come back around recently. And right after the 7 o'clock news, I'm going to dig in a little bit on the news that we heard today regarding the future of TV broadcasts for the Cardinals and other teams around Major League Baseball who are on Bally Sports. So we'll get into that coming up in just a little while as well. Wanted to mention, St. Louis continues to be a big event sports city, and it was announced today as the St. Louis Sports Commission, along with the University of Missouri, worked together, and they are going to host the NCAA Division I Finals for Wrestling in 2027. The NCAA announcing over 240 sites for D1, D2, and D3 sports championships for 2026-27 and 2027-28, and St. Louis gets one of them, which is the wrestling championship. Such a great event. If you've never been, because I'm sure a lot of people listening are not exactly huge amateur college wrestling fans, it is incredible. Now, admittedly, I was a terrible, terrible high school wrestler, but I was a high school wrestler many, many, many years ago. But I remember I was there for the first one that St. Louis hosted back in 2000, and I loved it. The thing I'll always remember about that, Brock Lesnar, who's now a WWE guy, or he was a WWE guy, I don't really know, but I know he's a big name. He was at the University of Minnesota, and he won the heavyweight championship. So that was the final match in 2000, and it was so cool, the energy and the excitement that went along with him. I think it was shortly after that that he signed a deal with WWE, but he was dominant. So such a cool event, and again, St. Louis coming through in a big way. They're going to continue to host a lot of NCAA events here moving forward. We heard earlier Michael Calhoun had an interview, and this the bidding process for this came at kind of a tough time because St. Louis is already set to host some events in the next cycle. So giving them those, say, like basketball, giving them a basketball event when they're already on deck to have basketball at some point in the next couple years, it's a little bit tough. But nobody supports this event, wrestling, the way St. Louis does. I believe they've hosted it now 10 times. And as far as I'm concerned, it's just something that should always be in St. Louis on an every year basis. And yeah, it's going to be back this year. So congratulations to the wonderful, wonderful people over at the St. Louis Sports Commission for putting this together. And it's great that the wrestling championships are going to be back in St. Louis. And that's going to be in 2027, and certainly something that is worth taking a look at. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we do continue with the Graybar Sports Open Line. So Maria Kina just threw me under the bus. Now, before she even was going to say that, I was going to keep her around, and I was going to publicly apologize to her before she threw me under the bus, saying I was the reason that she laughed a little bit. I reacted to the Brewers-Mets game, which the Mets now lead by a 3-1 score, and I reacted as the Mets were scoring runs. And that made Maria laugh.
It was the way you did it. Because at first I thought you were talking to me. Then I realized you were watching the game. And then I just started snickering while I was talking.
So we've had a couple things. Yesterday, I almost killed you accidentally.
You did.
So we have a very heavy door in our studio. And you were coming into the news. And you were just a split second late. So I went to open up the door for you to be nice. And I got to the door right as you're like dropping your shoulder into it. Because that's what it takes to open this darn door. And the door was opening as you're putting your shoulder down, and you almost bit it hard. I would have felt so bad. You are an athlete, Maria, because you figured out a way to keep your feet. And, good for you.
But it was tough. I was I'm losing my balance. It was like that fall that never ended. I kept on, like, falling into the studio here. Finally, it stopped, and I appreciate you opening the door for me. It's just that I couldn't keep my balance.
The chivalrous moments takes you out, right?
Yeah, I like that.
But we'll spend a lot more time together now. Baseball season's over. A lot more Sports Open Lines.
Yeah. That's one of the reasons I was late last night coming in here. I'm so used to having baseball on, and I was listening to a press conference, and then Matt came to the door and said, "Oh, Maria, you coming in to do news?" And I'm like, "What? Yes, I remember. I'm the newscaster. I'll be right there."
It's amazing how much our jobs change from baseball season to non-baseball season. I always tell people, I have two different jobs. Mm-hmm. And they go, "You work two jobs?" Like, no, I've one job for when baseball's going on, and I have another job when baseball's not going on. Because when baseball's going on, I'm at the ballpark every day. I'm working very late nights, not getting home until midnight or later. Like, I'm covering baseball. I was about to say heavy lifting. It's not heavy lifting because it's fun, but it's very time consuming. It's very grindy. And then during this time of the year, it's a 2-hour show every night, and it's just preparing for my day in a very different kind of way.
It's very different. Yeah. I mean, like over the weekend, what time did you finally get out of here with that late game?
On Friday. Yeah, we wrapped up, was about 1:30 when we wrapped up. John Camp was here for that one. So luckily for us this year, they played their West Coast games right at the beginning of the season and then right at the end of the season. So they weren't really filtered in much as the season went along.
They weren't. That's right. Yeah,
which I like that.
Yeah, me too. I don't like those West Coast games.
Neither do I. Neither does my family at home.
Because I fell asleep on your post game.
That's what most people do.
Well, I didn't mean to.
Thanks, Maria.
I see you.
That's Maria Kina from the news department. Wanted to get into the news today regarding the future of Cardinals TV broadcast. And let's be very clear before we even go. Like, so much was made of this today, and we really don't have any information. What we know is TV broadcasts are likely to change, but they're also not guaranteed to change. Earlier today, this bankruptcy stuff between Bally Sports, their owner, Diamond Sports Group, which is a subsidiary of Sinclair Broadcast, like it's complicated. These bankruptcy hearings have been going on forever. When I was in Wisconsin, I used to do some work for Bally Sports Wisconsin. So every time they have another hearing, 3 days later in my mail, I get like this huge packet that goes over everything that was announced, all in legalese from the last court case, or court hearing, I guess would be the way to say it. So bottom line, you probably don't care about all that. What you do care about is what's going to happen. So the initial reporting today was that Bally had basically cut ties with every Major League Baseball team except the Atlanta Braves, that they were going to say no through the bankruptcy situation. They were going to say no to every agreement they had except the Atlanta Braves. That wasn't totally correct. It was later amended to there's two different types of teams that are connected with Bally. There's joint partnerships and there's, I guess, non-joint partnerships. And the Cardinals are in a joint partnership. I believe, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I believe that's connected to the Cardinals having an ownership stake in Bally Sports Midwest. I think that's what makes it the joint partnership, if I have that part down. That doesn't impact what happened today, but I think that's where the difference is. So they got to the hearing today, and Major League Baseball was surprised when Diamond said, yeah, we're not going to do anything with anybody except the Braves here moving forward. These contracts are not good, but teams can renegotiate if they want. So that's where we're at right now. And is there a possibility? And again, they got to do the joint partnerships at a later time. It's not guaranteed, but there's no indication that they are going to stick with their joint partnerships while cutting ties with the teams that they did today. Right now, all indications from the people that I read and the people that I trust is that Bally is cutting ties with just about everybody except for the Atlanta Braves, that they don't like the contract terms that they're under, and through bankruptcy, they're able to get out from under those. So there's a few things that could happen in the way that you watch Cardinals games moving forward. First option is Cardinals and Bally get back together and they redo the deal with different terms that Bally would accept. I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think that's going to happen anywhere because Major League Baseball and Diamond Sports Group, it's been a very adversarial type thing in the courtrooms. Now, there has to be infrastructure to be able to get games on the air. And I think Bally will try to say that they have that available, so stick with us and we'll have the production all taken care of. But Major League Baseball's response to that is what they've already done in San Diego and Arizona. In the middle of the season last year, Bally dropped them, and the next day they were able to pick up using the facilities of MLB Network. And I've heard, I don't know this for a fact, so this is just something I've heard that Major League Baseball and clubs have basically already worked out deals with cable providers, both like traditional cable like Spectrum and also streaming cable systems like YouTube TV and DirecTV Stream and Hulu Live TV, all those, Fubo or whatever it is, that there's already deals in place where if this would have happened in the middle of the season and all of a sudden the Cardinals had to start producing their games one day, that they would have distribution. So I assume that's true. I don't have 100% that that's true. So the first thing that could happen is that they just stay on Bally under different contract terms. I don't think that's going to happen. The second thing that could happen is probably what's most likely based off what has happened in San Diego and also in Arizona, that through the facilities of MLB Network, they produce the broadcast themselves. They have these deals worked out where the games go on to cable channels and everything. Like in San Diego during the regular season, I believe there's just a channel that's blank all day, and then it's time for the Padres game and it goes on the air. That's what they have, at least for the time being. And then also, as part of that, they are allowing people to stream those games through MLB TV. And I believe blackouts have been lifted in those situations. If they haven't been lifted, the idea is to get it lifted. In fact, we heard from Bill DeWitt III in the press conference earlier this week that the Cardinals are expecting to have a direct-to-consumer streaming option, which is not something that is available right now if you are in the St. Louis market. So I think that's likely to happen. What also could happen is the Cardinals could work out a deal with over-the-air partners. They could go to a Channel 11 or a Channel, 32 or 36, the Matrix Midwest, the Channel 4 affiliated channel. I think it's 32. Anyways, they could go to them, and there's already been some quotes from general managers at TV stations across St. Louis saying they would be interested. If you did that, though, because don't forget, the Cardinals are more than a St. Louis team. Cardinals Nation covers multiple states. So if they're going to sit there and produce their games and give them to a local over-the-air channel like Channel 11 or something else, they're also going to have to work out deals with TV stations throughout the Midwest to cover all of the area that right now Bally Sports Midwest covers through cable systems. So that's a heavy lift. That's a really heavy lift. The part of just going to a local TV channel, that's not the heavy part of it. The tough part is going to be figuring out a way to get those games, the distribution, all over the place, and they're gonna that's part of it. And then the last thing that they could possibly do is they could just create their own regional sports network. They could maybe get in bed with the St. Louis Blues and other entities and create content and show. You know, honestly, if they created a TV channel and half the time on that TV channel was just classic Cardinals games being run, like if it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon and you're flipping through the channels and you see game 6 on TV, are you stopping to watch? I am. I know I am. So that's they could do that, and they've got now they would have to probably create more content, and they've already got a great content creation team with the folks with Cardinals Insider and things like that. That's a heavy lift too, though, creating a new channel. And again, they probably, if they did that, I think it would make sense to get in bed with the Blues on it. If they did that, that could be really fun in terms of watching it, but that's a big expenditure. And it also is going to take a lot of work to get it on the air and keep it on the air. So the bottom line is, I think we are, for those of you who are like cord cutters and you don't have access to Cardinals games, or those of you who are on like YouTube TV and you don't have Cardinals games because you don't have Bally, I think at the very least where this is moving is you are going to have a direct-to-consumer streaming option moving forward. I would guess that's going to be in place for this upcoming season. So if you want Cardinals games, you can get Cardinals games without changing your television provider. I think that's going to happen. So all in all, I think the news today is good for Cardinals fans. Might not be good for the Cardinals. This billion-dollar deal that they've got with Bally was somewhat backloaded. So they were supposed to get a lot more money on the back end of this contract than the front end. And now that contract might get ripped up because of bankruptcy. That really stinks for the Cardinals. That really stinks for the Cardinals because that's money they were counting on. And that also plays into everything that we've talked about this week with the payroll eventually going down. All right, there's kind of a primer on this. If you've got any questions that you think maybe I could answer, you can text in 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. And we'll try to answer that a little bit for you. But up next, we're going to talk about a pretty serious subject in concussions in football. There's a doctor that we're going to speak with, and she has just released a study. I'm going to get into that with her. It's very interesting. It's coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. As we're going to switch gears a little bit, but this is really interesting. There's a new study out. And we are going to talk with Rachel Grishow, and because of this interview, I have to say big words now. She is the Director of Epidemiological Research Initiatives and Co-Investigator of Family Experiences Managing Football Lives for the Football Players Health Study at Harvard, and Rachel joins us right now. Rachel, did I get that? Did that sound like I had any idea of what I was talking about there?
You nailed it. You nailed it. That was perfect.
Perfect. Awesome. This study is really interesting because it's not so much about whether or not football players get CTE. It's about football players, if they think they have CTE, and then the results of that as they live their lives. Is that, did I get that kind
of
right?
I'm very impressed.
Okay.
Yeah, you get it. I'm very impressed. I think a lot of people miss that's the point of the study. As you say, it's not about whether or not they have it, because they can't possibly know. No one will know until they pass away. It's about what is worrying about CTE do to a person.
So what does it do?
Well, I think that just to frame it out, I think one of the reasons we did this study is that we think that living players are in a really tough place. A lot of the studies that are out really focus on deceased players. So in a lot of ways, the living players have been neglected in who they are, what they're dealing with. And we think they're in a rough place because, on the one hand, I think they're having cognitive symptoms, right? They're having trouble thinking, with memory, with planning. And they want to do something about it. They're actually a really proactive bunch. And at the same time, the conversation around CTE and head injury is really dark. You know, there's no cure. There's no treatment. You can't even know if you have it. So really, we think these players are in a rough position. And what we're trying to do is figure out what can we do and what can we say that's actually helpful.
Yeah, that's the tough part about it. Is there anything that can be done?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Okay.
And I think this is why we're trying to get the word out, because we have a very different narrative that's coming out because of the data that we work with that tells a different story. And it's basically this, you know, in a sense, there are some things that players can't change, right, which is the fact that they had head injury. And there's some things they can't know, right, which is, do they have this condition? But what we're finding is that the guys who are most worried about CTE are the guys who have a lot of these cognitive problems. You know, they're telling us that they're having trouble with memory and planning and all and thinking and concentration. But what's so interesting about the study that really moved me was that the guys who have those cognitive problems are the ones that are also telling us that they have other problems that lead to those same symptoms. They have things like low testosterone, which absolutely affects your concentration. They have things like headaches, which makes it really hard to focus. Former players have all these conditions like sleep apnea that make it hard to focus the next day and interfere with memory. So what we're finding is that former players, living former players, when you talk to them, have a lot of conditions that are treatable that cause cognitive problems. And what we want to do is, you know, while we wait for science to catch up and tell us who has it and how to treat it, we actually can go after a lot of those conditions that we think are making the guys feel really hopeless.
Okay. I don't even know how to like...
That was a lot.
Yeah. So in some part, it's a chicken and egg, because is CTE causing these issues, or do these issues just kind of exist as is? You were going to have them anyways, but there's also CTE involved, so it exacerbates the situation. Is that
right.
Part of this as well?
I think probably. Again, there's a lot that we still don't know about CTE. Like, we know, look, it's absolutely been tied to head injury, and these guys had head injury. The part that we just don't know is, like, what happens if you don't treat their chronic pain, or you don't treat their depression or their low testosterone, their high blood pressure, sleep apnea, whatever. We don't know how that, like, synergizes necessarily with the head injury to get worse over time, right? So this is unknown. So you're right, you know, in a sense, like, it could be chicken or egg, but there's a possibility that there's an interaction effect. You know, there's something that they, you know, exacerbate one another that we don't know. So we're sort of saying to the guys, like, treat what's treatable. Because even if you can't know, you can bet that your sleep apnea that you're not doing anything about might be affecting how you feel the next day.
All right. So many years ago, there was the Frontline documentary that the NFL got out of. There was the study that resulted in the Will Smith movie, and that didn't seem to gain. I watched the movie, but it wasn't very popular. It's like people didn't want to deal with that. And then over the next few years, we'd hear about concussions, but it didn't seem like it was quite as much at the forefront. And now here recently, with studies like yours and other things going on, and this year the situation with Tua Tagovailoa, the Dolphins quarterback,
right.
It's kind of back out in the forefront. From an how important is it that players do start, and not just NFL players, football players across the board, how important is it that we get back to a point where we are talking about these things all the time?
I think we absolutely want to talk about it, because I think that what we're finding is that how much time someone takes to recover from a head injury absolutely affects their long-term health. Like, so if we know that if you're going to play, and it's really hard to dissuade, you know, people playing in the NFL from playing hard, you know, can you take the break between the two? You know, what can you do to protect your brain after you stop playing? You know, to be clear, our work is with you know, former players, right? We don't work with any active players. So we're pretty preoccupied with how do we care for them after they leave the league, after the head injury has occurred. So while I can't speak to, you know, preventing head injuries or the acute stuff, I will say that we're seeing that there's a lot that probably can be done to protect and treat some of the conditions that football players get anyway after they go. So yeah, keeping an eye on the conversation is key, but I want to, you know, be focused on the part that I know much about, which is, you know, the living former players.
Is there a lot of regret from the people you have spoken with that they did not take it more seriously when they were playing?
None of them, what I see when I talk to former players, because I do it all the time, is that the look they get in their eye when they talk about the locker room is just priceless. I think none of them, I think, regret playing. What I hear sometimes is the length of play. Some of them wish they'd left sooner. I think there's, you know, new technologies coming out with the Guardian Cap. There's new things coming out that I think they wish they had access to. So I don't know that anyone regrets playing, but I do think trying to emphasize taking care of their health after they go, there's a surprising amount of lack of health literacy among the guys. I think when they're playing, they've got all the medical care. They've got someone there attending to their every need. They have top-notch doctors. I think when they leave, that's when they sort of fall off and don't know how to get a doctor, what to look out for. So, again, I think a lot of it comes, how do they take care of themselves after?
Okay,
and that's where we come in.
I don't know you at all, but I'm listening to you talk, and I don't hear somebody that hates football. And a lot of times when I've spoken with doctors and other people who deal with concussions, I talk to them and I say, this is someone who just hates football. How important is it that the message that you and others, that players and other folks can feel like that there's not an agenda that goes along with it?
Oh, that's interesting. I've never been asked that before. In a sense, I just accept football as the reality. I think America loves it so much, and the players themselves love it so much. I don't see it going anywhere, so I kind of don't spend time thinking about how to bring about its end. I think in some ways it's about informed consent. You know, how do we give living former players, because that's who we care about, as much information as we possibly can, the ones who are currently playing to make decisions about how long to stay, and then more importantly, once they leave, to let them know that the head injury that they had can cause things like high blood pressure that are treatable. So I think in some ways, like, I don't have a lot of animosity towards the game, largely because the richness that it brought to the players that I speak to, it's so meaningful to them. I can't imagine trying to take that away, nor do I have the power to do that.
This is a terrible question, but as we wrap up, like, what's the bottom line here? What's the thing that you want people to know as a result of this research that you've done?
I want people to know, especially those who played ball or have had head injuries, that the trouble they're having with their memory or their concentration, go to the doctor and get the regular stuff checked first. Check your sleep apnea, check your high blood pressure, check your depression, check your testosterone. There's so much that you can treat that could really improve your life and your health. To focus on the CTE aspect of the story, you could end up losing a lot of good years.
Very good. Rachel, thank you so much for this time. I hope I don't sound like a total idiot talking to you, but I really
Not
enjoyed your
great
side
questions.
Of it.
You got the point of the paper, which is a huge relief.
Awesome.
So I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for your time.
Take it easy. Uh-huh. Bye.
That's Rachel Kershaw joining us. And again, I don't understand all this, but I know it's a big deal. And that second to last question that I asked her, like, how do we protect football players by really getting them to protect themselves by them understanding long-term implications of concussions? And it's not just, I was watching the, again, this is my second pro wrestling reference of this show, and I tell you, I used to watch it back in like the 90s. I don't watch it anymore, but I watched the Vince McMahon documentary that's currently on Netflix. It was really good. It was very interesting. And at one point, they're talking with Stone Cold Steve Austin, who's one of those guys that when I was watching wrestling, he was one of my favorites. And he basically said that he doesn't believe in CTE. He's been dropped on his head how many times in his career? And so that exists in pro. I'm sure it exists in pro wrestling. I know what they're doing is you know, those pro wrestlers are amazingly talented at what they're able to do and the way they are able to do things where the body doesn't take quite the brunt that you think it did. But there are still moments where guys are getting hit in the head, and you got somebody like Stone Cold Steve Austin who's probably been dropped on his head hundreds of times, and he's saying, I don't really think CTE exists. And that's a paraphrase. Go watch the thing for yourself and you'll see what he was saying. But that's the important part of all this. And if I'm a 22 to 28 year old, I'm 42 now. I think back to who I was when I was 22 to 28. I was an idiot. Most of us are idiots at that age. We're in our 20s, right? So if I'm sitting there playing football, making tons of money, knowing that I'm setting myself up for the rest of my life, I'm not worried about a concussion because I got other things that I deem as being more important. How do we get the message to these players early on in their careers, before they have families, before they have all these other things? And I don't totally know the answer to that question. I think Rachel's work goes a long way towards that. All right, we'll take a break. We will switch gears. We'll talk some Blues hockey coming up in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back at on Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you for about another 20 minutes. But if you're somebody who occasionally turns off the radio, say at 8 o'clock when Sports Open Line gets done, well, that's a bad decision just in general thought. But it's an especially bad decision this evening because we've got a roundtable discussion at 8 o'clock. I will be part of it. Tom Ackerman kind of was the leader. And then Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, part of it as well. Coming off the Cardinals press conference earlier in the week, we gave our kind of wide-ranging takeaways of what we heard and what we think is going to happen moving forward. So that's going to begin after the 8 o'clock news. So hopefully you can be tuned in for that. Last night, the Blues lost to Columbus by 3-1 score as they continue their preseason. By the way, I don't know if I should do this or not, but I'm going to, because I always try to speak well of people who do a nice job, whether they're competitors or not. I know sometimes in our world you're not supposed to speak about the competition. But as I did leave yesterday, I was listening to some of the Blues game as I was driving home, and a guy who used to be here at KMOX and is now over across the street got an opportunity to do a play-by-play of the Blues game last night in Alex Ferrario. I don't know Alex that well. We've talked occasionally in the Cardinals clubhouse. I knew of him, but I don't really know him that well. That's a really cool opportunity for him, and I thought he did a great job. So obviously Chris Kerber is the normal voice of the Blues, and he is amazing. Love listening to him. But Alex got a chance last night. I thought it was really cool that he did, and I enjoyed listening to him for a little bit as I was driving home. So a KMOX alum doing big things, and that was cool to be able to see. However, the Blues did not play well. I keep putting the caveat on it. It's the preseason. So, what do you really take away from the preseason? It doesn't seem like things are going the way that Drew Bannister would want them to go at this point. We're now less than a week away from the start of the regular season, and it just doesn't seem like it has completely come together. We saw some different guys on the lines, different line combinations in that game yesterday, and that did continue during practice today. So Drew Bannister spoke to the media after practice, and he spoke specifically about what they're trying to do and changing some lines around.
Yeah, and I think we did that yesterday, trying to get some life into our group and see. But again, today's a new day, and yesterday was yesterday. We've moved on for that, and I thought our group had a good response out on the ice. The guys worked, and I thought we got what we needed to accomplish here today to get ourselves ready for tomorrow.
So yeah, they're going to get back at tomorrow. And look, we're at a point now with the regular season starting less than a week. In a perfect world, you would like to be able to know what those line combinations are going to look like. And specifically today, Dylan Holloway got moved up, was a top six forward in there. We also saw Alexander Texier getting the opportunity to move up as well. And Bannister did talk about the importance of line chemistry and trying to get that as quickly as you can. Like, you got to get these guys on the ice together and skating together as much as possible as you figure out what the lines are going to be, what's going to give you the best chance to score goals, what's going to give you the best chance to win games, but then get them on the ice together so they can start developing some chemistry.
It's them getting touches together and getting some familiarity. Obviously, it's not going to come in one practice. You'd like to see it come together in one game, but that's yet to be seen. The guys will we'll play tomorrow, and then hopefully things for the Lions kind of match up. And so it's just, again, it's another opportunity for them to play with some different players. But, you know, we're coming down to a point where we have to kind of lock in some lines.
Yeah, they are getting to that point. Again, they've got just a couple preseason games left, and then they start the season on the road coming up next week. And you don't want to have a slow start to the season. Three straight games on the West Coast to begin the year, and you got to get some points coming out of that before you come home to get the home portion of your schedule started. I thought this was really interesting from Coach Bannister, because generally speaking, I don't think we're watching these preseason games. Again, it's preseason. We're watching these preseason games and saying, man, Blues are playing well. They've only won one game in the preseason. That was a win against Chicago in overtime. Outside of that, it has been multiple goal losses, except for their first loss of the year of the preseason when they fell at Dallas 2-1. Every other game that they've lost by multiple goals. So, again, the overall result doesn't really matter. More importantly, they're not scoring a lot of goals. They're just not. And they've scored one or less goals in what? Three of their five, is that right? It's just, there's not a lot of goal scoring. It doesn't seem like it's all put together yet. And it's not supposed to be all put together at this point. But I get the sense that they're just a little bit behind where they would want to be. And Bannister talked about kind of the dichotomy between being really happy with the way the team is practicing, the energy, the enthusiasm, all those tag words that people who aren't doing sports radio like to use, but then compare that to what they're also seeing in games, which isn't the same type of result.
To be fair to the guys, like, I've been really happy with how we've approached our practices in training camp. They've, you know, away from the rink, they've come in great shape. They're doing the proper things in the weight room, pre and post practice. The practices, you know, 90% of the practices I've been really, really happy with. And it's something that, you know, we talked about in the summer with our staff, with our players, that, you know, I felt coming into last year that maybe we lacked a little bit of that competitiveness against each other when we came to practice. And, you know, it's a credit to the players. But now, you know, I said this yesterday, we got to start seeing it translate to the games. And so we'll keep pushing our guys and getting them to work and practice until we see that happen.
Yeah, I appreciate the candor there. I really do. I appreciate the fact that he's saying we got to see it in games, got to see it in games, pushing in practice, got to see it in games. Unfortunately, some of that is some of the same narratives that we were hearing last year. Again, I keep saying it over and over and over, saying, oh, you're going to say, Matt, yeah, preseason. But two preseason games to go. I think a lot of people would feel a lot more comfortable if they could just kind of put it all together and it looked really good in one of these next two games. They're going to match up against Dallas coming up tomorrow night. And then they're going to have a neutral site game against Chicago coming up this weekend. And then that's going to be it for the preseason. Up next, the regular season. A week from yesterday, they are going to travel to Seattle to open up the year. Then next Thursday, a week from tomorrow, they play at San Jose. And then next Friday, they'll play at Vegas. So they're doing a 3 out of 4 on the West Coast in the first week of the season before they come home for a lengthy homestand when they're going to match up against four straight teams at home starting on October 15th, and that homestand is going to end on October 22nd. So that's, what, 4 games in 7 days. So a lot of games here early on in the season, which is not always the case. Sometimes it feels like the games are really spread out at the beginning of the season, but that is not the case for the Blues right now. All right, one more break. We'll come back and we'll wrap up this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. We'll get you back up to date on everything going on in the baseball playoffs. That's up next. And again, we've got our big roundtable that includes Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler, and Tom Ackerman, in addition to myself. That begins after the 8 o'clock news. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up here on the program. Tomorrow night, no show. We've got Thursday night football, and then we'll be back for a full 2-hour program coming up on Friday. Buccaneers and Falcons, the game coming up tomorrow night. And another reminder, after the 8 o'clock news this evening, we've got a special roundtable as Tom Ackerman led a conversation that included Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler, and myself. We posted the video of that earlier in the week, but if you saw it and want to hear it again, or if you haven't heard it, you can listen to it at 8 o'clock. And not to give too much away, but I think we're going to start doing more things like that here moving forward, where you're going to get an opportunity for us to be on screen a little bit during the day, and might repurpose those for radio stuff later on the day. But all that is sort of up in the air here at the moment. But I can't tell you how much I had fun doing it, just being with those guys. I still kind of pinch myself as somebody who grew up in St. Louis and read Bernie Miklas, the fact that we're colleagues now, and I'm having him on the show, and we're sitting there doing videos together. Like, it's pretty darn cool, and I'm glad that glad he's part of the team once again here at KMOX. So, the Royals today, they advance to the ALDS with a win over the Orioles 2-1. They sweep that series in Baltimore. Really impressive performance. I've got a soft spot for the Royals because I spent 2 years working in their organization. I was their broadcaster for their low A affiliate, and man, we got to the championship. I say we, the team that I broadcast for. The team got to the championship series in the Midwest League. Each of the 2 years that I was there, won one of them. It was a lot of fun. Many of the players from those World Series teams were there. Mike Moustakas, Eric Hosmer, Salvador Perez, Danny Duffy. I'm sure there's others that I'm forgetting here at the moment. So I've always kind of had a soft spot in my heart for the Royals. I don't really know. Like, I know there's like the Kansas City St. Louis rivalry. I can't talk about the Chiefs on this show without getting really angry text messages about you're the voice of St. Louis. Why are you talking about the Chiefs? Because there are a group of people out there who dislike the NFL so much and feel like the Chiefs are partly culpable for the Rams getting the opportunity to move to Los Angeles. And we're not going down that conversation right now. And I understand people who feel that way. I've never once dismissed people who feel that way. That is a very valid way to feel. Absolutely. But like the TV ratings show it, Chiefs are incredibly popular in St. Louis. When they're on TV, it gets a huge rating in St. Louis. So more people than not like the Chiefs. What, in a year where the Cardinals are not in the playoffs, what's the feeling on the Royals? I think the Royals kind of represent some hope for the Cardinals because of what they did last year to this year. It shows that you can do it. But what is that feeling? I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that coming up on Friday a little bit, on what the general feeling is on St. Louis people about the Royals. If you root for them just a little bit, or if you really, really dislike them because they're in Kansas City. All right, that is it for the program tonight. Up next, it's our roundtable, Cardinals roundtable. That's after the 8 o'clock news here on KMOX.